mayor hides the crime rates. Councilwoman hesitates. Public gets irate, but forgets the vote dates. Weatherman complaining, predicted sun, it's raining. Everyone's protesting, boyfriend keeps suggesting, you're not like all of the rest.
That's the sound of the 1960s and 70s there, the days of student protests, lunch counter sit-ins, the Freedom Riders, Vietnam, and Woodstock. And it's the voice of a man who was headed for stardom until he wasn't, a musician from Detroit named Rodriguez, who unwittingly became the biggest rock star in South Africa. Filmmaker Malik Banjulu tells Rodriguez's story in his new documentary, Searching for Sugar Man. The film takes its title from the first track on the musician's first album, about a corner drug dealer in Detroit. I spoke with Malik and Rodriguez last week and asked Malik to tell the incredible story.
It starts with a man called Rodriguez, who makes an album in the early 70s, which is a masterpiece. The producers know it's going to conquer the world because they just did Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye and Temptations and Supremes. And they know this is better. So this is going to be a world smash. And the result is the absolute opposite. It sells literally nothing. I mean, less than 100 copies. So he tries again and makes another album, and it's the same thing. So he stops. And he starts to work in construction, really hard manual labor in downtown Detroit. What happens is that Rodriguez, without his knowledge, one of those albums, one of those 50 that he ever sold, or 100 he ever sold, gets to South Africa. And in South Africa, Rodriguez becomes more famous than the Rolling Stones. He becomes one of the most famous artists ever, and he still is. And he didn't know about this for 30 years. But after 30 years, in mid-90s, there's this detective in South Africa who tries to search for the truth on how did Rodriguez die. Because in South Africa, he's as famous and as dead as Jimi Hendrix. And he starts to find, you know, there's not written his real name.
They believe he died.
They know he's dead. Of course he's dead. That's the common knowledge in South Africa. He's this monster star and he's absolutely dead. And then they try to find out how he died, because there are different versions on how Rodriguez died. The most famous was that he had shot himself dead on stage. There was another story that he had burned himself dead on stage, so that he had OD'd, and that was the strange thing. You only die once.
Right.
I mean, how did he die? That was the question. So those music journalist detectives start a quest, and they search for years, literally, to find any clues, because on the album it's not written his real name or where he comes from. So they start to go into the lyrics, and they decipher the lyrics and try to find, like, geographical references. And there are few, and finally they find the producer of the album, and they call him because they find this reference to Detroit, where Rodriguez comes from. And, you know, he's full of questions. Like, he'd been wondering for years. So where was the album made? Yeah, it was made in Detroit. And who made the albums? Well, it was me and another producer. And the thing we really wonder here in South Africa, everybody wonders this, is how did he die? And the producer says, what? Yeah, how did Rodriguez die? What do you mean? Yeah, it said that he shot himself dead on stage in Texas. Well, what happened? How did he die? Rodriguez, I saw him this morning. He's living down the street. He's alive. And for them, it's like literally like learning that Elvis Presley is alive. So they call him and they tell him in South Africa, you're more famous than Rolling Stones.
Well, let me pick it up with you, pick Rodriguez, because yes. Clearly rumors of your death were greatly exaggerated. No, you get this
Samuel
phone
Clemens
call.
Is lying. Yeah.
And yeah. What was your thought? After he'd gotten through his pitch and told you, explained that you are a superstar in South Africa, what was your thought?
Well, I didn't believe him. I thought it was just, but it proved out to be true. And so in 98, I toured South Africa. When I toured, I knew it was genuine because they knew my lyrics and they helped me through the concert in times. And so, yeah, it was
okay,
all
hold
very
on
actual.
Just a second, because I'm trying to imagine this and it is incredible. You're working construction.
Yes.
It's been decades since you recorded this album.
Yes.
You go to tour in South Africa, and this audience of thousands of people
yes.
starts singing your lyrics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Were you still playing music?
Oh, yeah. I did music, but I knew up to, like, 73 of this story. And after that, I kind of left music scene. Not music, but the music scene.
So, Malik, any idea why the album was so powerful in South Africa?
Because Rodriguez was singing really hard political stuff. He was singing anti-establishment lyrics. And in those days in South Africa, that was completely forbidden. You couldn't sing those words. And, of course, Rodriguez was censored. You couldn't hear Rodriguez on national radio. And they had a monopoly, so you can literally not hear
so
Ruiz.
So he became unbelievably popular, famous, sold, you know, by the thousands, despite the fact that he wasn't heard on national radio.
Yes, somehow, I don't know why, but you could actually get hold of the album. And they sold hundreds of thousands of copies of those albums. So he became mainstream, and he was literally the only artist that was mainstream that sang political content. And what he did was that there was this... Because in South Africa, you couldn't speak out against apartheid. You could get thrown into prison for 3 years just if you said anything bad without even having a trial. That was the situation. And the first like white liberals that really expressed something against their own regime were a group of musicians. And they all say that Rodriguez was the guy who taught us.
And one of his songs actually became a kind of anthem.
Yeah, there's a song called The Establishment Blues, and Rodriguez sings a line in there: "The system is gonna fall soon to an angry young tune," which was for them like saying, "Oh my, we could do something. Actually, we might be the ones who sing that tune." And that's what they literally did. That's actually where the start of the white anti-apartheid movement started in South Africa.
Gun sales are soaring, housewives find life boring, divorce the only answer, smoking causes cancer, the system's gonna fall soon to an angry young tune, and that's a concrete cold fact.
So, but let me take this back to you, Rodriguez. I mean, what was happening in Detroit at that time? That seems like it was a world away from what was happening in South Africa, but it appears that you're speaking about Detroit's politics had resonance in Africa.
Well, in the 60s and 70s, the protest song was a genre of music that I chose to write under, a la Dylan's Masters of War, Paul Simon's I Am a Rock, or Ohio by Neil Young, or Eve of Destruction by Barry McGuire. And the things that were happening in the United States with Kent State, the shooting on the students on campus. Cities were ablaze with riots in Detroit and other places. I met the audiences that in South Africa, and a soldier came up and told me that. He said, "We made love to music, we made war to music."
You know, let me ask you something. Do you feel cheated, Rodriguez? Do you feel like you made a seminal album that should have become as big as Sgt. Pepper's, and you got cheated out of, I guess, wider, broader success?
No, this is a music business. There's no guarantees. And that's very clear. No, I don't feel cheated at all about this. There's no blueprint for success in the music business.
Do people treat you differently, say, after they find out this about you, and when they find out that you're a rock star in Australia and South Africa?
Well, there's superlatives in the music business. You know, they're the latest, the greatest. We're the most current.
You don't have to do construction anymore?
Oh, please. Well, you never throw away your work clothes, Celeste Sadler. You know, it's a... But I don't do that as a regular occupation, no.
You know, Malik, you could not have written this story yourself.
I think,
and made it believable.
Yeah, it's true. I mean,
it's not believable as fiction.
It's the by far the best story I heard in my life. Like when you really find a story that is like a Cinderella story, that is a fairy tale with a happy. I mean, it's all there, and you have this kind of detective story that leads up to this resurrection. It's you know, it's better than Cinderella because it has a better soundtrack.
And it sounds like you've become a fan.
I am a huge fan. I mean, I really think that those two albums that Rodriguez made would have been two of my favorite albums, even if I was not at all involved in this story, because it's so accessible. And that's what you hear when people see the movie. The first question is never about the movie. The first question is always, how do I get hold of those songs? I want them now.
All right, so what's your favorite song off the two albums?
I think it's a song called Crucify Your Mind. They're beautiful, beautiful songs.
Soon you know I'll leave you, and I'll never look behind, 'cause I was born for the purpose that crucifies your mind. So convince.
Rodriguez is the subject of the documentary Searching for Sugar Man. Unaware he was one of the most famous rock stars in South Africa, he found out, and Malik Benjalou, the director of the documentary, filmed it all. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity to interview.
Was it a huntsman or a player that made you pay the cost, that now assumes relaxed positions and prostitutes your loss? Were you tortured by...